Look, we might not have $765 million over the next 15 years, like New York Mets just blessed All-Star baseball outfielder Juan Soto with this past weekend. However, if you value real basketball convos without any hidden motives or agendas, then we may just be able to give you 765 million reasons and more as to why you may want to make this your go-to podcast for all of the latest pertaining to all of the most recent happenings and storylines to take shape across the NBA this season. What's up, everybody, and welcome back into yet another edition of the New 24 podcast, episode 5 for all of those keeping score. Wherever it is that you have the pleasure of listening to us from around the globe that turns each and every day, I'm your host, Gabriel Wilkins. If you're no stranger to the program or happen to be a new listener, I have the pleasure of being beside the co-host, as always, of the show, and a man of many talents and hustles himself, Torrence Stagger. What's going on, my man?
Hey man, excited for episode 5. Let's get to it.
Indeed. In last week's episode of the New 24 podcast, me and Torrence took some time after the Thanksgiving holiday to examine the rough week that was for the Golden State Warriors, on top of discussing whether or not the Memphis Grizzlies have what it takes to be regarded as a legitimate contender in the West, as the franchise led by All-Star guard Ja Morant currently enters the week sitting number 2 in the conference standings after capturing victories in 9 out of their last 10 outings, including a big-time win on the road against the Boston Celtics, while also highlighting the return of Kristaps Porzingis to the Boston Celtics and what to make of the defending world champions to start the year, prior to closing out with a deep dive on the Philadelphia 76ers' rough start and what potential moves might lie ahead in the city of brotherly love. As we have a ton of topics to discuss on the docket this week involving several teams who, like last week, have went toe-to-toe against one another in recent playoff series over the course of the last half a decade. However, before we get into this week's happenings, let's take some time to show appreciation to a few of the game's best in our opening tip-off segment portion of the show here on the New 24 podcast, starting with the man who was selected with the number 1 overall pick in the 2021 NBA draft out of Oklahoma State, and Cade Cunningham, who became the first player ever in the history of the Detroit Pistons franchise to ever record a triple-double at the current Madison Square Garden last weekend. The 23-year-old guard scored 29 points to go alongside 15 dimes and 10 boards to help guide Detroit to a 9-point victory on the road against the Knicks to garner his 5th triple-double of the season, marking the third most, ever recorded to date in a single season in Pistons history. As Cunningham currently boasts the third most triple-doubles in the NBA this season, behind only Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets and LeBron James of the Los Angeles Lakers, it seems to be on pace to possibly earn his first All-Star nod, in addition to another young phenom who went just 2 picks after Cunningham in the 2021 NBA draft to the Cleveland Cavaliers, and Evan Mobley, who recently joined Kevin Durant, is the only player in NBA history under the age of 25 to ever record at least 40-plus points, 10-plus rebounds, 3-plus blocks, with at least 5 or more three-pointers made in a single game, as the big man out of Southern California poured in a career-best 41 points to go with 10 rebounds and 3 blocks en route to hitting a career-high 6 trays in the Cavs' 116-102 win against the Hornets out in Charlotte last weekend. And last, but certainly not least, the man known to many as the point guard, Chris Paul of the San Antonio Spurs, is a future Hall of Famer, officially surpassed the great Jason Kidd for 2nd place on the NBA's all-time career assist leaderboard in a 121-116 win against the New Orleans Pelicans down in Alamo City. Torrence, we had the pleasure of seeing some standout performances over the last week, such as Nikola Jokic of the Denver Nuggets joining the late great Los Angeles Lakers teammates Elgin Baylor and Will Chamberlain as the only players to ever post 45-plus points, 10-plus rebounds, and 5-plus assists in consecutive games, one of which included a 56-point, 16-rebound, and 8-assist outing against the Washington Wizards, albeit in a loss. Jokic also surpassed Magic Johnson for 3rd place on the NBA's all-time triple-double leaderboard last week as well. What were some of the top performances or performers, be it from teams or players, that have caught your eye around the NBA since our last recording?
Off top, we're gonna start with the reigning Eastern Conference Player of the Week, Tyler Herro. Man, he averaging 24, 5, and 5 this season on 47, 40, and 87 from the free throw line. He's been averaging 26 this month in December. And for a guy who's dealt with injuries a lot in his past and starting and coming off the bench, he started and played in every game for the Heat this season. And I think that might be a part of the reason why they're a little bit more comfortable with moving on from Jimmy Butler. And next up, Ayo Dosunmu of the Chicago Bulls. He's somebody I've always liked watching since the Bulls have drafted him. He plays hard. He's always consistent. He's kind of like a utility man. Like whatever the Bulls need on a given night, he steps into that role. He's been averaging 17, 4, and 7 for the month of December. As a starter this season, when he's had the opportunity to start, he's averaging 15 and 5 assists on 55% shooting and 38% from the 3-point line. So he's really worked a lot on his jump shot since coming into the league. He's a little bit up and down from 3, 36% as for a career. But he's also worked on like playmaking a lot. And I think that's probably been the best improvement to the team and the game is where he can bring the ball down the court, make plays for others, and he's also good off the ball as well. So me, I'm not familiar with his game from high school and college. I know you are. So if you wanted to like elaborate a little bit more on that.
Oh yeah, you know, Ayo Dosunmu is a Chicago native. You know, for those who don't know, we recorded this podcast in the city of Wynn, and a guy that I know very well. You know, start in Morgan Park High School, won a couple state championships before moving on to the University of Illinois, and got in that program to the number one seed in his sophomore season in the NCAA tournament before going pro and going in the second round to the Bulls. A guy that's definitely made the most out of his opportunity. You talk about the numbers he's put up when he started. How about this? When he's averaging between 30 to 39 minutes a game, he's averaging 15 and a half points alongside a 4.5 assists and nearly 3 rebounds a game. And he's also happened to shoot the ball at a very high clip. Like he's averaging a career high 12.7 points per game alongside nearly 5 assists a night. I've been very proud to see his growth and development with the Bulls over the course of his 4 seasons thus far as a pro. And I'm very curious to see just how far he can continue to take it, because for a guy that I saw at the high school level, who was known more for his slashing ability and his ability to, you know, play make and create for others, he's definitely improved his shot times 10.
And didn't they win a Big Ten championship in college?
Yes, he did. He won a Big Ten championship his sophomore year at a Big Ten tournament out of Illinois to the finals of that and won a championship, I believe, against Iowa.
Okay, cool, dope. And last but not least, Kevin Durant. He's out right now with an injury, but this season the Suns are 11-2 when he's healthy and playing. He's averaging 25 a game. He's had 30, I mean 6 30-point games this season, my bad. And he's 1-for-9. The Suns are 1-9 this season without him. And I mean, I don't know what other way you can see value when a guy's absent. These guys have like the worst record in the league. And when he's been there this season, he's been one of the best players in the league. Just got to stay healthy, man. But we getting, what, year 17 for KD? So he's getting up there in age. So hopefully he can come back and they can make a push through the All-Star break.
Yeah, they're definitely going to need Kevin Durant in order to get back into the thick of things out in Phoenix. You know, everybody talks about Nikola Jokic, and rightfully so, is being considered as one of the most valuable players. But when you look at what Kevin Durant has been able to do in the Suns lineup through, I believe he's played, what, 10 games thus far this season or whatever, like they're a top three seed in the West when he's basically played. And when not, they've looked like a lottery team, which is kind of wild to say when you consider the fact that they have Bradley Beal and Devin Booker in the fold. However, both of them just haven't been able to mix as well as we might have thought or expected to. And it's interesting you brought that up, because we talked about that in episode one when KD went down initially for a couple of weeks due to a calf injury and whether or not they can stay afloat. And I think we've been proven that to our, you know, so what we thought that we was wrong, you know, like they kind of can't hold on without this guy, and they damn sure gonna need him going forward. But for me, the top performers or performances that stood out to me over the last several days, I gotta start with a team that I know we're not gonna talk about No disrespect to their fan base, but we're not gonna really have too many highlights to talk about with this team because of where they currently are roster wise in the Washington Wizards. But they got a guy in Jordan Poole right now that's putting together a career season, and recently just had a big outing against the Denver Nuggets where he went off for 39 points and routed 9 triples alongside of 8 assists and 5 rebounds. And he was putting together some spectacular one-on-one live dribble, you know, moves, getting his buckets in isolation. And even though he took 23, shot 45% from three-point land on that night. So he was in his groove, in his rhythm, and he's making the most out of his opportunities, currently averaging 18 points, 5 assists a game, 5.5 assists a game, excuse me, through over 30 minutes of action in the month of December through 4 games. I'm curious to see how far he continue to take it. And he's also shooting 40% from downtown, which I believe is a career high for him. So it's good to see him making the most out of his opportunity as the lead man in Washington. Hopefully, you know, the other rookies can develop alongside of him, such as Bob Carrington and Sar alongside of Keyshawn George. I'm curious to see how those guys all mix and match with one another, as I know they'll seek to make some trades and get those guys even more playing time to grow alongside of one another beside Jordan Poole, who they really going to be counting on to lead these guys going forward from the bottom to the penthouse, hopefully someday. And then you got Jalen Suggs at Orlando Magic. You know, Orlando Magic recently received some unfortunate news in regards to one of their all-stars. We're going to get into that a little bit later in the show. But Jalen Suggs stepped up the other day against the Phoenix Suns, put up 26 points and had an amazing game and made some big shots down the stretch, went 8-for-18 from the floor, 4-for-10 from three-point land, also finished the game with 4 rebounds. This guy stepped his game up in the month of December, averaging 18.2 alongside a 3.8 assist per game. And the thing I like about this Magic squad, man, it seems like no matter who is down for them, whether it's a Paolo Banchero, or Franz Wagner, Jonathan Isaac, guys are stepping up and rising to the challenge, man, and playing for one another. You love to see that, especially when you know this is a team that has something to play for. And it's currently in the top 3 of the Eastern Conference standings. And then last but not least, Joel Embiid. You know, I did something on Sunday that I usually don't do during football season. I didn't watch a game during the afternoon slate. I saw the Sixers was playing the Bulls. I got win last minute through the notification on my phone that Joel Embiid was going to play. And I was curious to see how he performed. And he came out rather rough. He went 0-for-6 to start the day. Took a couple of threes. You can tell he didn't have his legs under him. Looked like he was struggling. Was getting slandered a little bit on social media as well for that. And then in the second quarter, you know, he started to go to the game that we know him to operate well in the mid-range area of the floor, between 18 to 20 feet. Knocked in a couple jump shots before you knew it. He had 15 points in the second quarter. Went on to finish the game with 31 points and 12 rebounds and 33 minutes of work. And what I was impressed with was, in spite of him being out for over 2 weeks, once he got in his rhythm, he showed you why he was still a top 5 player in the game when healthy. And if him and Tyrese Maxey and Paul George could continue to get some minutes together alongside of one another and beat the opponents that they're supposed to take care of, just maybe they can make a run in a play-in. And hopefully, you know, he can develop better as a leader. We all know what, you know, Tyrese Maxey said, as Torrence alluded to, about him, you know, coming late to meetings and whatnot. You know, when you win, it doesn't always get talked about a lot. However, with him getting off to such a sluggish start, it's always a topic of conversation. You know, I'm curious to see just what level he could continue to go to. I know he's having some issues with his leg. I don't think he's missing games because he wants to miss games. I think he's missing games because he knows, like, his body isn't always able to hold up. But when it is able to hold up, when he's able to play, he's still showing that he's a valuable player in his league. And hopefully he can continue to do that, just to remind people of his greatness. And you look at everything that he's managed to overcome over the last several years, considering the fact that he missed the first 2 seasons of his career dealing with, you know, numerous injuries. I say he's had a pretty remarkable career, and I know everybody want to see him get to that next level, winning a championship and so forth. But like I said, when the man's healthy, he's still a top force in the league to be reckoned with. Hopefully he can stay healthy because the game misses him. And we know that's where the frustration stems from with most of the
I have nothing more to add.
We're going to move away from all the opening pleasantries here at the 224 to discuss the main event that many basketball fans will have their eyes set on over the next week in the NBA Cup, where group play has been officially completed and the knockout round of the league's in-season tournament will feature 8 teams, 4 from each conference, who will seek to compete in the quarterfinal contest set to take place on Tuesday and Wednesday night for the right to move on to the semifinal round out in Las Vegas this upcoming weekend, where the cash prize of $500,000 are wasted. After a frantic final evening, a group play last week featured 13 teams vying for the final 5 spots in the knockout round. The stage has been officially set. Dallas Mavs, who edged out the Portland Trail Blazers and Phoenix Suns to earn the West wildcard spot after storming back from a 15-point deficit against the Memphis Grizzlies in their Group C finale out in it last week, will go on the road to take on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Oklahoma City Thunder in a rematch of last year's Western Conference semifinals matchup, as the Thunder edged out the Suns via the head-to-head tiebreaker to earn Group B in the West, while the Milwaukee Bucks routed the Detroit Pistons in the two teams' Group B finale out East that will prove to be the decisive matchup to determine who would advance into the quarterfinal round, as Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard combined for 55 points to lift Milwaukee to a 21-point win to face the Orlando Magic, who earned the wild card spot in the East. And the NBA Cup quarterfinals will also feature a team that boasts the best offensive rating in the league as of this recording, as the East Group A winner in the New York Knicks will take on the only team that has knocked off the Boston Celtics and Cleveland Cavaliers twice this season, in the East Group C winner, the Atlanta Hawks, while the fourth and final NBA Cup quarterfinal matchup in the knockout round will involve the West Group C winner in the Golden State Warriors traveling to Houston to take on the Rockets, who won Group A and currently sit among the top three of the West standings entering Week 8 of the season. Florence, although Magic and Bucks and Mav Thunder will have both gone final by the time this episode drops, which quarterfinal matchups are you looking forward to watching the most out of the four?
Well, out of the four, I have one in particular, and that's that Mavs Thunder game. That's the one I'm looking forward to seeing the most.
And you would allude to why that is?
I mean, like you mentioned, the rematch from the conference semifinals from last year. And also this season, they played already one time without Luka, and Dallas still took that game by two. So the OKC Thunder, you hear them get talked about a lot as far as, oh, they're a great young team. They're ahead of expectations. Well, at some point, you got to win something. And right now, we at the final eight. This is their opportunity to start getting some of that experience right now. You get a chance to beat the defending Western Conference champions in a game with some stakes. I mean, it's actual, like, cash money on the line. So I'm just curious to see how they come out and take on the challenge.
A game, like you said, with stakes, and not only just a game with stakes, a game that is going to involve a team that happened to dispatch you in 6 games last year and ruin your hopes of winning the Larry O'Brien Trophy. So I'm curious to see that game as well. That's definitely a matchup that I have on my radar. But outside of that one, I would say the showdown – in New York City, between the Hawks and the New York Knicks. We talk about Trae Young, and we know he made his stage and presence known a few years ago in the first round against the Knicks, and showed up and showed out in Madison Square Garden to the dismay of many Knicks fans. And I'm curious to see if he can add another chapter in that rivalry between him and that fan base, because if he can, I think we're going to be in for a very intriguing matchup, and I'm very excited to see that one because of the history that these two franchises have with one another. You know, the Knicks have always traveled rather well when it comes to, like, road games and their fans, like, packing out State Farm Arena and whatnot. Well, now Atlanta has to go behind enemy lines and face off against them, and a lot of those guys over there, such as Trae Young and DeAndre Hunter, are very familiar with some of the guys on their Knicks roster. So I'm excited to see that matchup, as well as Warriors, Rockets, You got an old school team in Golden State, rather with veterans going up against the new kids on the block in the Houston Rockets that are seeking to be party crashers at this event. And I'm curious to see if they could do it and use it as a coming out party under head coach Ime Udoka, who has really done a great job with this group and has these guys outperforming the expectations that many, including myself, had of them entering the season. So I want to begin in order with the first two NBA Cup quarterfinal matchups that will have concluded once again by the time listeners get a chance to listen to our episode this week, starting with Magic and Bucks. This is the first NBA Cup quarterfinal matchup taking place out in Milwaukee on Tuesday evening. The injury report for Orlando is as follows. Franz Wagner, the guy that was putting up mega numbers, looking like he was bound to make his first All-Star appearance this season, has been ruled as out due to a torn right oblique suffered in last Friday's loss against the Philadelphia 76ers. Paolo Banchero is also out with a torn right oblique. It is set to return into probably the next several days from now. Gary Harris is also out with a hamstring injury. And Jonathan Isaac is listed as day-to-day with a hamstring injury and has been ruled as questionable going into this matchup against the Bucks. So his status is up in the air as we speak. Meanwhile, for Milwaukee, the injury report is Giannis Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton. Both are listed as probable for this matchup with knee and ankle issues, respectively. When you look at this matchup, Torrance, got a young upstart Magic squad, going to be without two of their top players. One, two, dynamic duo that everybody wants to see. This is a team that I know we thought would make some major noise in the NBA Cup, but unfortunately, they're going to have to do it without their two main guys. Meanwhile, Milwaukee is heating up at the right time. Just recently came off of a 7-game win streak, starting to round out and come into form. Who are you taking in this matchup?
I got Milwaukee. They're a healthier team. Like we ain't gotta waste a lot of time on that one.
Yeah, I'm rooting for Orlando. Don't get me wrong. It'd be nice to see them, continue, but they got their work cut out. And I think Giannis and Dame and Chris, they're gonna try and get back to Vegas for the second year in a row and see if they can get in the finals this time around. I'm going with the Bucks in that one as well. And then we got the nightcap in the NBA Cup quarterfinal matchup on Tuesday going down between the Dallas Mavericks and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Dallas injury report, you got forwards P.J. Washington and Najee Marshall being both listed as questionable against OKC due to illnesses that they're dealing with, while Jaden Hardy and Maxi Kleber have been listed as out in this matchup. Meanwhile, for Oklahoma City, we know that Chet Holmgren will also be out of this matchup as he's still in the process of recovering from the hip fracture he suffered nearly a month ago. In this matchup, we just talked about it being one that we're looking forward to watching among the main four in the quarterfinal round. Who you going with?
For this one, I'm going to actually go out and take OKC for this one. I think they find a way to pull it off. I mean, I know Luka's back for this matchup, but OKC, I mean, I just want to see them get to Vegas. I think that it'll be important for them long term to get to that matchup, and I think they can do it.
I'm gonna get an edge to OKC. I think this is gonna be a very close game, but I believe that the Thunder having a healthy Isaiah Hartenstein this time around might prove to be a big difference alongside of the stars SGA and J Dub. I think they're gonna do their thing, and Isaiah Hartenstein, even though he's not the main guy, he's been doing very well in the absence of Chet Holmgren, averaging a double-double with 11 points, 12 rebounds a game, almost 5 assists, and shooting over 55% from the field. So if they can get that type of production from this guy consistently while Chet is down, I think they'll be fine. And I believe that they advance to Vegas in the semifinal round to play and get one step closer towards the NBA Cup. Moving on, we got a Wednesday night showdown at 7 p.m. Eastern time, 6 p.m. Central time on ESPN. Atlanta Hawks, New York Knicks. Injury report for the Hawks, you got Jalen Johnson and Bogdan Bogdanovic, who sat out in the Hawks' most recent outing against the Denver Nuggets with shoulder and quadricep injuries, respectively. Both of them are currently listed as day-to-day. Meanwhile, the Knicks, minus Mitchell Robinson, should be at full strength in this contest as Campaign and Carl Anthony Towns return from their many absences at the top part of the week against Toronto. Who you going with in this matchup in the battle between two Eastern Conference folks?
I'm going with the New York Knicks.
The Knicks right now, they looking like one of the hottest teams in the league. I think that Garden crowd is gonna be into it. You know, it's gonna be a sellout crowd. But I like Atlanta. I like Atlanta. It's some about them, man, where when they play against the top teams in the league, they come ready to play. And in the first matchup of the season, they beat them in Atlanta. You had Zachary Richardson have a 30-plus point performance. I think in this game, I think Trae Young rises to the occasion. I think he plays a role of villain in a manner akin to Reggie Miller back in the 90s. And I think the Hawks are going to advance to Vegas to play that semifinal matchup.
All right, before you get to this next one, though, right?
Yeah.
I just understand this NBA Cup is thing is new, right?
Yes, I do understand
They
that. Yeah.
need viewers, they need eyeballs, and they need people that can actually travel to that game on short notice if the team gets to Vegas. Dog. All I'm saying is David Stern would guarantee that the New York Knicks are going to be in Las Vegas. So you going out? I'm just saying that you really this a long shot Atlanta winning that game. So we can move on though.
Hey, it's always been a long chat most games involving Trae Young, but I don't think Trae Young tends to care about that. I mean, he has some great playoff games or play-in games on the road that I can point to, such as when he had a big performance against Cleveland or whatnot. So it's just the role that he's been thrown into, even though I don't think he cares to play it, but he played the role of villain rather well on the road, and I think he will do it one more time. And the last matchup on the nightcap for Wednesday, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 8:30 p.m. Central Time on ESPN. Got the Golden State Warriors against the Houston Rockets. Andrew Wiggins, who left last Friday's game after 19 minutes of floor time against the Minnesota Timberwolves with an ankle injury and did not return, is optimistic that he'll be cleared to play for the Warriors on Wednesday night in Houston, according to ESPN's Mark J. Spears, despite being listed as day-to-day at this time, while Moses Moody is also listed as day-to-day after aggravating a left knee injury last Sunday night in a Warriors win over Minnesota. Meanwhile, on the Houston side of things, Fred VanVleet is currently listed as day-to-day with a knee injury after sitting out of action in Houston's most recent outing against the LA Clippers on Sunday. Tari Eason, who was also out in the same matchup as VanVleet due to a concussion injury, is also listed as out on the Rockets' current injury report after entering, the league's concussion protocol a few days ago. His status for Wednesday evening's quarterfinal showdown is currently unknown at this time. This is a matchup that we know a lot of people are going to be wanting to watch because of who it involves and Steph Curry and Draymond Green, the team of the previous decade, one of the main things of the Golden State Warriors. Who you going with in this?
All right, to keep up with the theme of my last point, we obviously got the Golden State Warriors winning this game. Like you said, Steph Curry, besides LeBron, the most watched guy in the NBA. Some would say the most watched guy in the NBA. We got a new trophy. We have a new tournament. We in year two of it. LeBron and the Lakers carried the weight last year, and I expect the same for the Golden State Warriors this year. We got to legitimize this trophy and the MVP award. We had LeBron win it last year, and I'm looking forward to Steph Curry walking out of Vegas with that money.
Yeah, I know you've been real adamant talking about Golden State getting into this finals of the NBA Cup. I know you've been adamant, and I do believe that it needs to be legitimized. However, I don't see why some of these young stars can't crash the party a little bit and make things interesting. I don't. I mean, we had a little bit of madness last year at the NBA Cup with the Indiana Pacers in the Eastern Conference. I'm not saying that that's going to happen again, but the Houston Rockets might have something to say.
They had an agenda for Tyrese Halliburton. No, I mean, I'm just saying, like, he ended up on the Olympic team not playing, and now that's why he's been a big story this year, because it's like you got the hype from the NBA Cup, then you're in all of these commercials. You seen everywhere, and like it didn't match up. This is a business still. The Houston Rockets, they don't have a guy on their team that the league is really trying to get behind and like push to the forefront. I mean, talent-wise, Jalen Green, but the NBA hasn't put that battery behind him. They're definitely not putting that battery behind the Rockets over Steph Curry. Like, come on now. Hey, watch for the free throw disparity or Draymond not to get fouls called against them. When you hear the commentators start the game talking about how they letting them play physical out there tonight, just know what's going on. Now I got the Knicks against the Warriors in the finals, man. I think the NBA gonna go and max this viewership out.
Anyways, no time giving that prediction. See, on the finals, I haven't thought about it that far down the road yet, but based on my picks, it would be Bucks versus Hawks, and then it would be on the West, Thunder against the Rockets. I'm gonna say Oklahoma City is gonna win against Milwaukee in the finals. That's my finals for the NBA
So,
Cup this year.
okay. Now, this is why everybody listen. I want you to understand. Gabe a real true basketball fan at heart. Like he got the purest heart when it comes to the game. Bro, the NBA is not gonna wait on the Milwaukee Bucks and the Oklahoma City Thunder to be in the finals of a new championship that they have, and they gotta fill that arena out. I mean, but hey, I mean, crazier things have happened. But I know that David Stern, if he gotta go pull somebody's leg himself to get the result that's needed, then that's what would have happened. But we'll see.
Well, Adam Silver's NBA is much different than David Stern's NBA. And I think we've seen that with the last couple of NBA finals that we've had to watch. So, because I would have never thought a Denver Nuggets championship was possible. Oklahoma City, Milwaukee Bucks, NBA Cup finals matchup, I could see it just because you do have stars in those markets. It may not be, well, Giannis is a mega star, but Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a star in the making coming up, about to get his own shoe with Converse. It could be a perfect opportunity for him, man. That's the way I see it.
You got a good heart, bro.
Hey, if New York get there, cool. If Golden State gets there, cool. I'm gonna watch either way, but that's just who I think will end up winning. And it's not a shot to Golden State. Golden State should be seeking to win this cup. If nothing else, they should be seeking to win this.
They turn the lights down on the court to let you know how special this game is. Or
Oh, I remember.
they not dimming the lights for OKC and Milwaukee, man.
They got to add them to like this Vegas. There's no
Hey,
other way.
Braun had to carry that weight against Indiana last the state of Indiana last year.
Oh, I
We
remember.
not making the same mistake twice.
Moving away from highlighting the NBA Cup chatter to talk about one of the teams we will see in the quarterfinals of the event that, when facing off against the best of the best in the East, has managed to hold their own as of late in the Atlanta Hawks, who, despite sitting in the middle of the pack in offensive and defensive rating on the season, are currently playing some spectacular basketball, having won six out of their last seven games, led behind their leading conductor at the point guard, Trae Young, including Jalen Johnson, who's beginning to slowly cement himself as one of the top young forwards in all of basketball, as the former Duke star is on the verge of constructing the 2010 and 5 season in just his fourth year in the league, as the Hawks managed to beat the Cavaliers twice over the course of a 3-day span, while also going on the road to put an end to the Milwaukee Bucks 7-game win streak last week and route the defeat in the Los Angeles Lakers, courtesy of a game-winning three-pointer from Young late in overtime. As Atlanta currently sits among the top of the play-in portion of the Eastern Conference standings in seventh place entering week eight of the season. Although Young and Johnson serve as the main headliners on this Hawks squad right now, Torrance, there are several other young players who have also played a prominent part in helping Atlanta catapult up the standings as of late, such as Dyson Daniels, who is averaging nearly 14 points per game on almost 45% shooting from the floor and leads the league in steals with 3.2 steals per contest. A mark, if he were to finish the year with, would make the Great Barrier Thief from Australia the first player since Alvin Robertson in 1986 to average at least 3 steps per game, as he also leads the league in deflections by a wide margin of 150 and counting. DeAndre Hunter and Bogdan Bogdanovich have also supplied a great deal of energy to the Hawks' second unit as well, alongside the number one pick in this year's draft, Zachary Richey, who exploded for 33 points against the Knicks on 11 for 18 shooting from the floor in their first matchup a month ago. When you look at this Hawks squad as currently constructed right now, do you believe that they can crawl their way from the play-in range to within the top 6 of the Eastern Conference standings?
No, I don't think they can do that, honestly. When you look at the teams above them in the Knicks, in the East, such as the New York Knicks, the Milwaukee Bucks, Boston Celtics, the Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Orlando Magic, who I feel like can hold steady until they get Paolo back and then eventually Franz as well. I just think that those teams are better than the Hawks. And when you look at the Hawks statistically, they're one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the league. For the month of November, they were just a 500 team. So from the standpoint of growth and development, yeah, what you're seeing with the Hawks is nice to see. Between, like you said, Dyson Daniels, the number one pick, Richey, and Jalen Johnson as well. You see positive signs for the future. But this season, I think they still got a long way to go.
I actually agree with you on this one. I think they could probably sneak in, but they won't be any higher than the 6th seed, in my opinion. And they would need a lot for that to happen. And I think the only way that they could do that is if they continue to play not only up to the level that they have against the top teams in the East, but also ensuring that they're doing whatever it takes to beat the teams underneath them. And those are the teams that they're really struggling the most with. You can tell when they're playing the top teams in the league that they get up for those games. I've really been impressed with the way that their second unit has looked. You know, we talk about Young and Jalen Johnson, who once he gets a full head of steam getting to the rim, it's pretty much game over. You know, he's looking to go over the top of you and put you on a poster. DeAndre Hunter, man, has really found a role for himself off the bench, getting to it in the mid-range game, locking up, being a nuisance defensively that we saw him be his first couple seasons in the league when we thought he had the makings of being an all-star wing. I don't know if that's in his cards moving forward, but he's definitely cemented a role for himself and shown himself to be valuable off the bench alongside of Bogdan Bogdanovich and Bogey, who, in my opinion, is one of the more underrated reserves in the NBA. I don't see them crawling out officially from the play-in range, but if they could just find a way to take care of business against some of these under 500 clubs, they could sneak in there, but it would take a lot of luck. It would take a lot of luck. I'm not going to lie to you on that.
Yeah, I just think ultimately it's just a more positive sign for the development of the team and the roster. And like you said, finding guys like DeAndre Hunter, you know, getting something out of them when he was somebody they were looking to trade the last couple of seasons. Because like you said, he wasn't quite reaching the potential or expectations the media placed on him. I don't know what the team had planned for him, but let's just say the media.
Yeah, you know, you talk about DeAndre Hunter and Jalen Johnson, a guy that I don't think got enough consideration last season for most improved player. You know, they gave it to Tyrese Maxey, but Tyrese Maxey was a guy that I think a lot of NBA fans expected to take a significant leap. We know James Harden in the picture in Philadelphia. Jalen Johnson was a guy that was picked, I believe, 21st overall in the same draft class as Cade Cunningham and Evan Mobley, who we discussed earlier to open up the show. But I didn't expect the jump that he took in year 3 last year, and he's taking an even bigger jump this year. I hope that he's in consideration for most improved player for the year honors this year, alongside our all-star honors if he continues to play at the level that he has, because he's looking like one of the best wings in the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talk about the conductor himself, Trae Young, who's currently leading the league in assists with 12.2 dimes per game in his seventh season with Atlanta. The shooting numbers, I'm sure, are not where he'd like for them to be at. As Young is currently shooting under 40% from the floor and well below his career average for three-point land through the first quarter of the season. However, the three-time All-Star leads the league in clutch assists and total clutch free throws, which for our listeners who don't know what that means at home, we're basically saying that he's someone who you want initiating your offense in the final 5 minutes of the fourth quarter or overtime when the score is within 5 points or less, which is considered his clutch minute. In your own words, what makes Trae Young so valuable in those situations?
Yeah, in my world, he's not that valuable in those situations. Now, I'm gonna, like, on the positive side, like, Trae Young, he don't give a fuck. Like, that's the attribute that counts the most in these situations. Make or miss, like, Trae Young has 100% confidence that he should be the guy on the court taking that shot. And he just made one against the Lakers last week, which, I don't know, like I see you heard me say many times on here, I watched pretty much every Lakers game. I knew he was going to make that shot against them, but they give up a lot of threes.
They do.
Yeah. Now, Trae Young, yeah, like I said, he don't give a fuck. He going to put the ball up. So, statistically, he shoots, like you said, below 40%. He doesn't shoot a high percentage. He takes a lot of difficult shots on the court. He shoots threes from very deep. So it's more of a shot selection thing with me more than anything. If I had to, you know, give somebody the ball, go right ahead. But do I really want to give him the ball? No, I don't.
Well, I get what you're talking about from in regards to his shot selection, but I think what's made him valuable, at least this season thus far, for an Atlanta Hawks team that's won a lot of games within the last 5 minutes or the fourth quarter, late in regulation, when the score is within 5 points or less, I think it's his playmaking ability. And like you said, you add that on top of his confidence, he's really the best player that they have when it comes to initiating things out the pick and roll or whatnot. So with Trae, the one thing I always like about Trae is there are times on the floor where you can't speed him up and you can't slow him down. He plays at his own tune in a court. And, yeah, it's certain shots that you look at, you be like, why he take that? But when he's in his groove, you got to let him cook, man. And he was in that groove the other night against the Los Angeles Lakers. And we know about the Lakers being a team that don't really have the most crisp rotations. And he made them pay.
Yeah, but see, the thing with Trae and the playmaking is he doesn't use it in those final 5 minutes. It's like everybody on the court knows that, like, Trae at his essence wants to shoot the ball. And that's what Trae did. So you with him on the team, you got to live and die with how he feels that day. And I mean, to me, he just doesn't have the size and the consistency in those moments, like, to justify me consistently giving him the ball.
When I say about Trae Young, I'm not saying he's the most clutch player in the league, but I do believe that he's provided this Atlanta ball club as of late with a stabilizer, you know, with a young team that likes to push it and run in transition. They do a great job of that, especially when they force turnovers. We know that it's not a team that is going to lead the league in three-point field goal percentage, as you talked about. They're one of the teams that's in the middle of the pack, if not at the bottom. But they find a way to win a lot of these close games, man. And Trae has been a big factor as to why, as much as Jalen Johnson had.
That nigga ain't Kobe. That nigga ain't Mike. That nigga ain't KD. Run a play. That's what I'm saying. You see what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to just inbound the ball to Trae. Nah, let's run a play and let's get the best shot on the court. Like, ain't nah.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, you go an old school coach. No, I'm talking about him.
Trae
a freestyle artist.
Yeah, I'm talking about specifically with him. There's some guys in the league where I'm like, yeah, let's get him the ball on ISO and let's see what happened to win this game. He not on my list.
We know yours is a tough list to crack, but do you believe that fans across the country and beyond appreciate Trae's game enough? Me personally, I know he's a polarizing player. I understand that his style ain't for everybody. But I also know, and I've seen Trae Young execute on the biggest stages when he's had to, you know, such as his first playoff run when he led the Hawks to the Eastern Conference Finals. You can say what you want to say about it, that it was a shortened season and the bracket played the way that it was supposed to play in Atlanta's favor. But at the end of the day, he put on the show and put that team in the national forefront at a level that it hadn't been at in quite some time. So do you believe that the fans across the league really appreciate his game? There are times, I'll be honest, I don't personally think they do, but I kind of understand why to a certain degree. But nevertheless, I think he's become the forgotten one. And he might be to the modern day generation what Chris Paul was to ours in some way.
No, I see. Look, what we're not going to do is disrespect Chris Paul like that.
It's and, not disrespect.
And I like to disrespect Chris Paul. So even that was outrageous to me. I think Trae Young properly rated depending on your perspective on the thing, on matters. He's had a really good NBA career. I mean, me being a Bulls fan, I wouldn't mind Trae Young being my starting point guard. I just don't think he needs to be the guy you're building the entire team around like they've attempted to do on Atlanta on a couple of tries. I think the trade with Luka is unfair to him because players don't make trades as well. At least not coming into the league. They don't have too much of a hand in their trade. So he's connected to that. But like you said, he's made it to the conference finals. Damian Lillard gets a lot of love. He's only made it to one conference finals. Making it to the conference finals is a hard achievement, especially for the Atlanta Hawks. They haven't been, but maybe one other time, at least in my lifetime, since I started watching.
Mm-hmm.
So for the most part, I think he's properly rated. I don't know if you guys would think he should be the starting point guard of the Eastern Conference All-Star team every year. Should he always be on the All-Star team? It just kind of depends on where you feel like he should be rated or viewed as. Definitely not superstar to me, though, and definitely not the point guard.
No, I'm not saying that Trae Young is a superstar. I do believe he's an All-Star talent. He may not get to the All-Star game every year because of where his team is and the standards or with the numbers that he's putting up. And sometimes he's just a forgotten guy, you know. And that's unfortunate, and it's part of the business. And I always say they're going to be casualties in war. And sometimes it's going to be casualties in the NBA where the talent pool is just so greater than it's been in quite some time. So when I look at Trae's game, I think the one facet of his game that does get overlooked is his playmaking ability. I'm not saying that he is Chris Paul per se, but I think to this generation of young fans coming up, when they look at how to play the point guard position, they're going to take a look at some of Trae Young's tape just as much as they do Chris Paul's tape. You know, it's just like the previous generation that came before us. It was John Stockton. So he's kind of cut from that mold. You know, he's the guy that's 6'1" at best or under that the small guards are going to try and look to imitate when it comes to their game and how to navigate through pick and roll and whatnot. He's a traditional point guard with the ability to pull up from 30 plus.
I mean, you answered my Chris Paul comparison question. So I'm going to let this one ride right here. You made some great points about it.
Well, thank you. Well, let's keep the show pushing along to discuss the team that the Atlanta Hawks will have to face off against in their quarterfinal matchup on Wednesday evening of this week in the New York Knicks, a team that has won 7 out of their last 10 games after getting out to a 500 start through their first 10 games as the franchise guided under the direction of head coach Tom Thibodeau has climbed out of the bottom 10 in defensive rating over the course of this stretch, allowing just 101.6 points per 100 possessions, while Karl Anthony Towns has managed to do nothing but produce since being acquired by the Knicks days prior to training camp in a blockbuster trade with the Minnesota Timberwolves, as the four-time All-Star center is averaging 25.1 points per game to go alongside a team best 13.3 rebounds on 53% shooting from the floor and nearly 45% shooting from beyond the arc, beside his brand new running mate, Jalen Brunson, who is also continuing to play at an All-Star level himself. Last week, Torrance, we had a conversation about a team in a similar spot as the New York Knicks and the Memphis Grizzlies, where I asked you whether or not you view them as a legitimate contender in the Western Conference at this point in time. We just saw Karl Anthony Towns post 24 points, 15 rebounds, and 6 assists en route to hitting the clutch pick and pop 3 in a 2-man game beside OG Anunoby to seal the deal in a showdown against the Toronto Raptors that came down to the wire at the top of the week. Talking trash to the fans out in the six, letting them know that New York is on his chest proudly and well. The Knicks currently sit just a game behind Orlando Magic in the East, as New York is in fourth place as of this recording with a 15-9 record. Real quickly, what do you make of the Knicks through the first quarter of the regular season?
Right now, I mean, I'd say that I'm impressed by the Knicks. When you look at it on paper, like, especially now that it's played out, you understand the move that they made to get Karl Anthony Towns. It allows them to play five out, sort of similar to the way the Boston Celtics can play with Kristaps Porzingis. Now you got Karl Anthony Towns, who brings that ability to the team where they previously had Isaiah Hartenstein and Mitchell Robinson. So it adds a new dynamic to the team. And you got Anunoby and Mikal Bridges on the wings and Josh Hart as well to provide like a real solid perimeter defense where Jalen Brunson, he's kind of small up front, but he holds his own well. And then we know that Towns, who gets criticized for his defense, but the last couple years he's made good improvements. Like, he played very well against Nikola Jokic in the playoffs last year, and he's kind of carried that over to the Knicks where, you know, he played for Tom Thibodeau before, so I'm sure he was very well. He could, you know, he knew what to expect. You got two guys averaging 25 a game, and JB and Cat. That's always a great sign. And Cat's having an MVP season this year. You know, I don't think most people expected that, but he got to New York, and like I told somebody privately, the Knicks, they thirsty. That fan base is thirsty, man. You don't got to win the championship. If you go over there and play hard and just kill, like, they going to love you forever. Like, Cat got, like, three nicknames since he got over there right now. And like you said, he pulling on his jersey, showing the New York. I know he's from, what, Jersey? He's from over there.
Yes, he is.
So, I mean, he Dominican, too. We know New York is a big melting pot. So, what they calling him, the big bodega, like, it's been a great situation and a great energy over there for them.
You know what, man? Before I give my thoughts on the Knicks real quick, I'm very happy for Karl Anthony Towns. It's a guy that received a lot of shit from various people. And he rose to the occasion in the playoffs. I kind of like to refer to this as like the N effect. Like, I see it. Like, He flexing a little bit. And he's earned the right to do it a little bit. And you talk about an MVP season. He probably will get considered of being like the top eight, if not top five, for the award itself with the year that he's having. I like the chemistry that him and Jalen Brunson have in the 2-man game and the 1-5 pick and roll. And even in the pick and pop, is working exceptionally well. And he's more vocal now than I've ever seen him in his career. And it was a point in time, I remember Karl Anthony Towns do a lot of complaining on the court when he wasn't getting calls his way. I haven't noticed that since he's been in New York. I see him playing through pain. You know, he was walking with a gait yesterday where you could tell he wasn't himself, but he was like, hey, Tibbs, don't sub me out. I'm going to keep playing through it. I don't know if you've been watching Patrick Ewing videos, or tapes on how to, you know, endear himself to New York City fans, but he keep playing it the way that he's been playing. They gonna love him even more, because I could definitely see this team making a run to the Eastern Conference Finals if things go right and they continue to play at the level that they have. But what I make of the Knicks this year, it was rough starting out. Guys being in and out the lineup, no Mitchell Robinson. But I think what they managed to do is I think they found their chemistry at the right time, and they've done it by handling business against the teams they're supposed to at a soft point in their schedule. OG Anunoby is really grown into a solid two-way presence. You see him shooting the ball with confidence more than ever. It's a far cry from the player that I saw when he was in Indiana. I also like what I'm seeing from Jalen Brunson, you know, in the pick and roll game, being the closer that they need him to be. Josh Hart, you know, he's a winning player dating back this days of Villanova. It's great to see him on a contender. I overall right now, I would give the Knicks an A minus grade if I had to through the first quarter of the regular season. They exactly where I thought they would be, winning the top three of the Eastern Conference standings. And I think they will continue to get better as the season goes along.
Yeah, but I like see the here's the thing. Despite all of this that we're saying about them, I don't see them as a title contender. I don't.
Which
I still.
Brings me to my next question.
Yeah, I don't see that.
Why? Why is that? Because that was what I was gonna set you up to answer. Do you view the Knicks as a legitimate contender in the Eastern Conference? And you said no. State your case as to why.
Nah, because look, man, everything that we said is great. It's positive, but. Some things don't change. And Tom Thibodeau is the coach of the New York Knicks. We know that Tom Thibodeau gonna play guys a lot of minutes. Like, that's just what he gonna do, man. Like, he don't care if he got 10 people that's capable, 7, 6. Bro gonna play his 7 guys that he like, and that's who gonna play all the minutes. It works. I mean, you gonna have a chance to win every night, but when guys start getting hurt, when the wear and tear starts to come, there is never an adjustment made. I don't see anything different this season. Yes, they have a great starting lineup. They got what? Top 2 offense in the league so far this season?
Number 1.
They shooting 40% from 3 as a team this year? That's not Tom Thibodeau basketball. Like I said, if it sounds great right now, but I don't see that being sustainable. They don't have a lot of bench depth. And Cleveland and Boston, I think they just better than them. I honestly just think they're just better than them. Like, the Knicks thing, it sounds good, it feels good, but they need to be putting all their chips into that NBA cup. That's what they need to be worrying about.
Oh, I'm sure they're going to do that one with the money on the line. I'm pretty sure you got Cat coming back against Toronto, making sure he got his rhythm intact for that. And campaign came back and played very well off the bench against Toronto the other night. I do question their depth. I'm not going to lie. You definitely need that if you're playing for a Tom Thibodeau team with the way they go through bodies, and he's going to play guys a ton of minutes. I don't see them as a legitimate contender in the Eastern Conference for many of the reasons that you mentioned, but I also just trust Boston a lot more than I do New York. And Cleveland's looking like one of those teams that could mess around and pull off the unthinkable that no one saw coming over the summer under Kenny Atkinson, a guy who you and I believe is by far right now the coach of the year in the NBA. I can't argue against it if anybody has a case for him winning it. I know Ime Udoka is kind of close, but if Cleveland continues to play the level that they have, I don't know how you're going to stop them in a best-of-7 series. And I like the Knicks offensively right now. The ball movement is excellent. It's more crisp than it's ever been. But, yeah, you're right. Tom Thibodeau is going to play, guys. You see some of the injuries starting to show themselves a little bit, because I see Josh Hart getting up and down every time and taking falls, driving to the cup, and barely can manage. And I'm like, man, God bless that man. I know he got to be getting ice treatment after every game.
Yeah, man. I've seen this story before with the Knicks, man. You go out there, sacrifice your body for about 2, 3 years, 10 years past, they cheering for you at the Garden like you know you did something. But as fans for real, like fans that like your local team, I'll say that about the Bulls. I don't know if it's a big city thing, but we like guys that play hard, that's consistent, that play good team basketball, don't require a lot, not complaining. So I definitely get the appeal of the Knicks. And one last thing that you mentioned, like the Cavaliers, when you mentioned them doing the unthinkable, not going to get into in-depth about any of this, but there's clearly an old gentleman in the state of California who seems to believe that the impossible is on the table, because we've seen some trade rumors today. Not to get
Yes,
too
we
far
did.
into that today, but you know, just a few people starting to notice some things about that Cavaliers team this year.
Oh, I'm pretty sure that the old man who once donned the burgundy and gold is definitely taking a look at Cleveland and looking at what they've been able to do without him. Is this is looking like the best team since that era has come to a close in Cleveland. It's definitely looking like that. And I'm pretty sure he's looking at it. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see some of those rumors continue to percolate up into Christmas Day, which is the time of year where you always get those insider reports from Sham Sharania at ESPN, letting you know what a certain player is thinking at a time when you least expect it. But moving along from the two teams who square off against one another later on in the week to lay claim towards capturing the NBA's in-season grand prize, to shed some light on a team that made their first appearance in the Western Conference Finals in 20 years last season and is seeking to find its way back there despite a slow start. Through the first 18 games of the 24-25 campaign, the Minnesota Timberwolves appeared to be stuck in the mud with an 8-10 record following an 11-point loss at home against the Sacramento Kings during the midst of a back-to-back set that also included an overtime loss at home against the Houston Rockets. His all-star guard, Anthony Edwards, would leave nothing unsaid in his post-game remarks, calling out the team as a whole and labeling them as soft. Now, Edwards' venting session with the media appears to have paid significant dividends. Minnesota has captured wins in four out of their last five outings, all the while holding teams below 100 points in every victory during that span, as the Wolves currently sit within the play-in range of the standings in ninth place and just a game behind the Los Angeles Clippers for the sixth seed out west. Despite boasting a roster that features the likes of Ant-Man, Rudy Gobert, Jaden McDaniels, Miles Reed, and Mike Conley, who all played a key part in the Wolves' postseason run a year ago, Minnesota has been working to get a pair of newcomers up to speed in all-star forward Julius Randle and guard Dante DiVincenzo, the two players who came via New York in the Karl-Anthony Towns trade just a few months ago. Randle, who was a double-double machine during his five-year tenure with the Knicks, has only managed to post a total of four double-doubles through his first 23 games with Minnesota, despite a shooting the rock at a high clip, as a former Kentucky product is averaging 20.4 points per outing, almost 49% shooting from the field and 36.7% from downtown, alongside seven boards per game. Real quick, Torrance, you know, this is something we've been talking about off the record all summer since the trade happened and going into the season, how Julius Randle could fit beside Anthony Edwards in Minnesota, whether or not if he's a long-term piece or not. We know we're going to hear a lot of trade rumors involving this man's name in the coming weeks. What do you make of Julius Randle's fit thus far beside Anthony Edwards in Minnesota?
I'm still not all the way sold on the fit, you know, on paper or in theory, I should say. Getting Julius Randle to replace Karl-Anthony Towns, it allowed them to still play five out in certain lineups, still keep somebody out there that can shoot the ball from the power forward position. So from that standpoint, he provides a level of continuity with the team from last year. However, the biggest difference is that tends to be like a ball stopper. He likes to get the ball in isolation and almost play like a guard, you know? And I don't know if it knocks the rhythm off of others around him or what, but it always seems to be that he gets his numbers, but it doesn't really help the team in the long run. I don't know if his presence this year also has anything to do with Ant shooting more threes this year and getting to the free throw line less. And I would like to see Ant start to get downhill more, you know, to balance out his game a lot more. So overall, I'm not really sold on the duo yet.
I can't say that I'm fully sold, but I do see signs at times and in stretches where it can work. And that's usually when Julius is playing within the flow of the offense. Like you said, he's a guy that is known as a ball stopper, likes to get to it in isolation, going downhill or whatever, or getting within the mid-range area of the floor when he's really got it going. But overall, I think it's clunky. It's times where you could tell, especially through the first seven games, that he was struggling to find his footing there because he was doing a lot of overpassing. Like, it was times where he get the ball kicked out to him, be wide open for the three. He wouldn't take it. You know, there's times he had a driving lane. He wouldn't take it. He just kick it back out to someone else for an opportunity. It seemed like he wasn't trying to, you know, fuck up the vibe a little bit. But over time, he's starting to get a little bit comfortable. He had a nice first quarter against the LA Clippers. I believe it was last Wednesday night where he went off for like 18 in the first quarter and they annihilated them. And the Clippers was coming off of, it was the second game of a back-to-back. I believe they might have beat them by well over 30. I know at one point going into the fourth, they were up by 30 and Antman was just chilling on the sideline and then to a dome or whatever. So like, what I make of it overall, it's not the most appealing fit. And I do think that you're going to continue to see the trade rumors heat up as it pertains to Julius Randle, because he can still offer some teams something. But I don't know. I think we know that they made this trade as a way to dump salary in an effort to get themselves some cap flexibility while still remaining competitive. But overall, I think it's apparent that may not be best long-term, but I still need to see just a little bit more in the coming weeks. As far as what you talk about with Anthony Edwards, you know, he's shooting a lot of threes, but he's making them. But, yeah, of course you want to see him attack and get downhill, because once it gets into playoff time, as you always talk about, we know how much that mid-range game can open up so much more for some of the game's top stars when they're seeking a double and they know what you're running.
Yeah, for sure.
But keeping it, you know, on the Timberwolves and talking about the fit between Julius Randle and Anthony Edwards, the two all-stars over there alongside of Rudy Gobert, how would you assess the Minnesota Timberwolves through the first quarter of the regular season?
It's hard to just say that they're disappointing, because the run that they went on last year was more of a run. They weren't the team that they were in May. They weren't this team last year at this point. This is who they were last year at this point, trying to figure out the fit between Cat and Rudy and Ant, and it's kind of similar to this year. So maybe they go on a post-All-Star run, but I don't know. I don't see it this year as much. You got Michael Conley. He's a year old. So now you're starting to see Rob Dillingham play more. Jaden McDaniels has been kind of struggling this season. He hasn't been playing as well. So right now, I mean, they're in the play-in range. I do expect them to at least make the play-in if you just base it on the first part of this season. But I still think I need to see more from them.
I would assess it. I'm not going to base my evaluation of them on what happened in the playoffs. I think they got hot at the right time and they caught lightning in a bottle. And as a result, they were able to parlay their way into the Western Conference Finals. And it kind of became America's team in a way amongst NBA fans. Everybody was eager to see them and to see how far that they could go, especially after sweeping the Phoenix Suns in the first round. But looking at their team now, I would say that defensively, or at least through the first half of the first quarter of the regular season, they weren't the same team that we saw a year ago. Rotation-wise, they were a step slow. And like you said, guys are getting older and trying to bring that energy and be that vocal leader. I love it from him, and I respect him for it. And I think it has energized a lot of the guys on that team and made guys look at themselves in the mirror more in the manner that they needed to. And they're finding a way to pick it up as of late. But in order for them to get within the range in which they were last year, seed-wise, they're going to have to go on a big win streak. And not only go on a big win streak, but find a way to bond with one another through these trips that they're going through, because I believe they just won a West Coast road trip and they managed to do well on that road trip. So hopefully they can continue to keep that going. because I believe over the next couple of weeks they're gonna have an important stretch of games coming up. You got the Lakers coming up again on the schedule, a team that they annihilated last week and kept that offense relatively in check. I would have, you know, that they're gonna come back trying to get, you know, back and get everything back in blood, rather, you know, for what they lost in that second matchup, they even on the series thus far this season. I give them like an average grade of like a C, but I don't expect, I never put high expectations on this team. I just say that. Like, I wasn't expecting them to just go from Western Conference Finals to NBA Finals like that, knowing that this is a roster that is still being formulated with young players still learning what it takes to win at this level.
Yeah, they should have traded Rudy, man. That's really what this is. It's not Julius Randle's fault that he ended up in a situation. He just happened to be the move that they made. But ultimately, I think we're gonna look back at this time, and the time to trade Rudy Gobert was last year. Like all the offseason that just previously passed. He's not gonna get better these next few years. Teams don't respect you because you have Rudy on your team. In the postseason, his offensive struggles are always going to be an issue. I just think they should have rolled with Cat and rolled that energy long term. I'd be if it was and Cat this year and they were off to these struggles, I'd be like, you know what? We're going to just ride this out because these are our two cornerstones. And like Cat alluded to in the press after the conference finals last year. He was like, you know, this was a step we took. And next year we plan on taking another one. And y'all traded him. And financial reasons or not, like I said, I think I would have just tried to get rid of Rudy. Because now you got Rudy, you got Mike Conley. Now you got two guys you're relying on who are on the back nine of their career and probably regressing. And now you're not gonna get as much for them. As like you know, like right now, as you would have gotten like last year, because that was a drastic move to make the trade. Cat, like they try to make it like, oh well, we kind of traded all star for all star, but you really changed a whole lot about your team from the age, from the culture, from like Cat was there a long time, and Minnesota doesn't have all stars. Like that was a homegrown talent that you gave up on, and like you said, the Ant effect. You felt like you saw a change in his personality from being around Ant. I won't call it leadership last year, but just his encouragement. You know, like, man, you want your best big in the league. Play like it. Shoot the ball. Be aggressive. Attack. And now you're seeing the benefits of it in New York City.
Yeah, that's well said, Torrance. And I gotta ask you a question real quick about that, man. You know, because we had a conversation about this Minnesota Timberwolves team last year that made it to the Western Conference Finals on my State of Gay pod, the last episode that I did prior to the start of the NBA Finals, where you brought up how getting back to the Western Conference Finals was not guaranteed for Anthony Edwards in a conference where you have Oklahoma City, you have Memphis. You have all these young squads, Dallas, Houston, they, you know, they coming. And
Wemby, the Spurs.
right, it's Spurs, you know, we covered it all in that episode. You were talking about that. Well, if we look back at this several years from now, and the Timberwolves never end up getting back to the Western Conference Finals or advancing to their first ever NBA Finals, is this the trade that we're gonna look at and say that this, like, what could have been in Minnesota? Because like you said, you talked about how Cat was starting to come into his own, and I thought he was really getting comfortable playing the number two role beside Ant, you know, who, even though he was the younger guy, I believe that Ant's leadership and, like you say, his encouragement definitely helped Cat take his game to another level.
Yeah, I mean, and see, here's my thing. When it comes to duos, you need as much as you need a great number one, you need a number two that understands the responsibility of number two. You know, for all the greatness of a Michael Jordan, it was Scottie Pippen who, if needed, will guard the other team's best player. If needed, will run the point. You know, if needed, he would be more aggressive on offense and be like, okay, I need to go get 20 tonight. Because, you know, Scotty averaged about 17 and 18 on games Mike played.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw the same thing with Cat last year, where it's like, even in press conferences, he always acknowledges, man, Ant's the face of the league. This is Ant's thing. We, you know, we riding with Ant. I'm just here to do my job, whatever we need to do. We needed more effort on defense, he gave it. They needed him to be more aggressive offensively, he gave it. That's a dynamic that's going to be hard to replicate no matter who you bring in there, because maybe you bring in a guy who should come second, but he needs a new contract, or he's playing for his notoriety and his respect. You kind of already had this dynamic figured out with these two. You just got to move the other parts around. You don't move that. That's just where I stand with that team. So that's why my expectations for them are ultimately low. I feel like this was nothing to be as crazy as the James Harden trade, but this is definitely going to be one that if Ant leaves one day, this is going to definitely be the trade that they point to.
Yeah, I could definitely see that one. And I understand where you're coming from on that 100%, because we've seen this situation before in Minnesota, man. You know, between a duo, even though that duo didn't go as far, is the Cat and Ant regime. You know, it just seems like, I don't know what it is in Minnesota, man, with duos. They just can't never keep them together. But entering the final home stretch portion of the show and exiting stage right on the conversation pertaining to the Timberwolves to discuss a team who they share a recent playoff history with over the last couple of seasons in the Denver Nuggets, a franchise who, despite capturing their first ever Larry O'Brien trophy a couple seasons ago, now find themselves within the play-in portion of the West standings, despite receiving countless grandiose performances at the hands of the league's reigning MVP and center Nikola Jokic through the first quarter of the season. Denver, who boasted a 14-8 record through their first 22 games a season ago, currently sits seventh in the conference standings with a 12-10 record through 22 games this season under head coach Mike Malone in his 10th season under the helm in the Mile High City, and have failed to win two consecutive games in over a month, as the Nuggets are currently sitting just outside the top 15 in defensive rating to start the season for the first time since the 2019-20 campaign. Torrance, despite Nikola Jokic averaging a triple-double line with 32.3 points, 13.6 rebounds, and 10.2 assists per game through the first quarter of the regular season, Denver has not managed to find any bit of success in the minutes where the six-time NBA All-Star is off the floor, as the Nuggets are currently getting outscored 17.2 points per 100 possessions whenever the big man sits, compared to outscoring opponents by 10.2 points per 100 possessions in the minutes where Jokic is on the floor. No one, including Jamal Murray, has shown an ability to help keep this offense afloat in the non-Jokic lineups to date thus far. What do you make of these struggles up to this point for the Nuggets without Nikola Jokic on the floor?
I mean, their entire offense is built around him. So usually those teams tend to have that exact problem. Like, we saw that with a bunch of LeBron James-led teams. Guys are used to playing a certain way around a certain figure on the court, and there tends to be confusion when that guy's not on the court. Now, the easiest remedy to that would always be like a guy like a Kyrie Irving, who relishes the opportunity to be on the court by himself, where he can go out and be aggressive and go make things happen offensively. Denver feels like they had that guy in Jamal Murray, but Jamal Murray's been struggling like a lot this season. You know, you bring in Russell Westbrook. Well, pretty good. I mean, he's a role player at this point. So there's like not much expectation there. And you got MPJ, who's averaging more points than Jamal Murray this year, a guy who gets usually talked about as if he's going to be the first guy shipped out. they ever needed to make a major move, and he's actually playing better than Jamal Murray. So I don't put too much stock into how they play without Jokic, because when it comes down to it in the playoffs, he's going to be out there. It's just more so, like, overall, they've just been struggling, like, as just a unit, which is disappointing considering 80% of the guys who are in the starting lineup when they won a title are still on the team, and you still have the same head coach.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to pose that question to you, man, because even though that bench unit is not as deep as it was during the year they won the championship in 2022-2023, I can't understand how they continue to struggle like this. Like you said, yes, their offense is predicated heavily on Nikola Jokic and his play and everything they set up and orchestrated through him. But even defensively, like, the rotations just aren't as crisp. And Tony Jones, who's the beat writer or beat reporter for the Utah Jazz, pointed this out on Twitter last week. And kudos to him. He said, man, they look like they ain't even having a lot of fun playing together, which is kind of the exact opposite of when you watched them play the last 2 years when they was among the top of the pack in the Western Conference. Still have enough time where they could get to that level. But they're struggling. And defensively, I think that's playing a significant role just as much as it is offense. Whether Jokic is on the floor or not, like, I don't see guys chasing guys off the three-point line, contesting shots, you know, some nights, it looks like it's coming down to effort. And it's also some nights where Mike Malone looks like he's a bit impatient with some of the growth and development of the young guys.
Well, Mike Malone might be the problem.
And why do you say that?
Man, it just tends to, this what happens after a while. People get tired of hearing a certain coach's rhetoric. You know, day after day, night after night, year after year. You know, we've already won the championship. We didn't repeat. You know, guys got their contract situations. Guys are getting dangled in trades. I think, yeah, situations don't, you know, we completed the ultimate goal before. And I think that this is a prime example for people to see why players and coaches always talk about why it's so hard to repeat. Because of things like guys saying like it's not fun anymore, you know, the stress is the pressure. And you know, it was an example with Jamal Murray and Aaron Gordon tried to have a huddle on the court, and Jamal Murray never made his way over to it. And Aaron Gordon just kind of waved everybody back, like, just forget about it. You never saw that during the year they won the championship or years previous. So guys have had an attitude change over there for whatever reason internally. It's showing on the court. And maybe the on-court struggles are the source of it, but that remains to be seen.
Speaking of the on-court struggles, ESPN NBA insider Sham Sharania recently reported at the top of this week that the Miami Heat are open to listening to trade offers on all-star forward Jimmy Butler, who was said to prefer landing on a win-now contender should he get dealt prior to the conclusion of the trade deadline on February 6th, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Central Time. What moves do you think must be made within the coming weeks to help the Nuggets in their quest to get back to the top of the West standings? Because if there's any team that I would expect to make a move in the West, even though they may not have the young talent that Houston has that might be enticing to some teams, I think Denver is going to be a team that seeks to make a move.
I don't see Denver making no move. And if they were to make a move, it may be to get someone to play backup center instead of DeAndre Jordan. In those minutes, Nikola Jokic isn't playing. But other than that, if you ever take the time to read about Calvin Booth and his philosophy on building this team, you know that he's willing to sacrifice a couple of years to get guys developed long-term as far as role players and young guys on the team. So I think that he won't look to pretty much, you making a trade, if you're making a substantial trade, then you're one, giving up on those guys' development because you're cutting their minutes back. And you'd have to, like, pretty much interfere with that starting lineup. And I don't think the situation has gotten that dire to do that. We just got to figure out a way to get Jamal Murray going again.
Yeah, I don't expect them to make a move for Jimmy Butler. I could tell you that right now. I know Miami is going to definitely seek to get some young talent back with a little bit of draft capital that they could get for Jimmy Butler. But it ain't coming from them. It ain't coming from them.
I don't see that. Let me just do this real quick. One, I don't see Jimmy being the difference maker that he's going to get marketed as during his trade season. That's one. He hasn't been healthy the last couple of years. By admission, his effort tends to come and go depending on how important he feels like something is at the time. I know he needs a new contract, but he hasn't really been having the best of seasons. And maybe this is part of the reason why. He knows that the trade deadline is coming in December 15th when all these contracts are coming up. You know, that's when all of these talks are going to start. And I don't see Miami trading for, like, young players and picks. I think they're going to try to make a one-to-one move, like a Kawhi DeMar DeRozan type of move for Jimmy Butler. That's how I look at it. Miami's never gonna put themselves in a position to go backwards. Like, even when you look at times where they had to strip the roster down, they still went out and got guys like Luol Deng, Deion Waiters, Joe Johnson, guys who are already like veterans in the league who still had a lot to offer. I don't see them making the young player trade. You got Tyler Hero playing great. You still got Bam over there. You got older young players like Jaime Jaquez. I don't see the Heat making that type of trade.
When I say young players, I'm not saying like guys that are winning their first year, second year in the league. But I could see them being intrigued. And this is just me thinking out loud. Possibly in a Jonathan Kuminga. A guy that we've talked about that could be on the block, you know, and they could still be within the thick of things in the East. Because one thing about Miami, they're going to find a way to develop. And they sure as hell going to find a way to make sure that you're in the best shape of your life so that you could go out there and go to war for 48 minutes with them. Because if you're not, Pat Riley will cut your ass in a minute.
Well, I mean, yeah, all that shit sound great, you know, but
it's the truth. But I give.
I mean, Jimmy. I mean, I just think like at his peak, Jimmy Butler is gonna go down as one of the best Heat players ever. I'm gonna probably put him top five. Like he got y'all to two finals appearances. So you probably not about to get anything close to that back in the trade. But he's also not that guy anymore.
And I think the reason why he's being put on the market and why this report is coming out is because Miami has no intention on trying to re-sign him. And they know that Jimmy wants his money.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's looking like, or at least not at the number he might be looking for.
Exactly. Yeah, I think they pretty much parted ways. And Pat Riley kind of hinted at that before the season started with some of the comments that he made about Jimmy Butler, that he was pretty much, you know, getting ready to do what we see is coming to the light now. And I'm pretty sure he would prefer to be in a win-now environment because at this point, the only thing that's really left to play for Jimmy is a title. But like you said, he's not getting any younger. And health-wise, it is a major concern at this point, at this stage in his career.
Yeah, it definitely is, you know. I don't know. I got to do some more research on, like, these win-now scenarios and teams because just off the top of my head, I really don't see the move that it looks like he's looking for. But I could be wrong.
Well, according to what Sharani is saying in the article, The teams that he listed are the Dallas Mavericks, the Houston Rockets, and the Golden State Warriors. So
Yeah,
you can make with
yeah,
that what you will.
yeah. I'm gonna make what I want with that too, because I got a wish list too with three names on it. All wishes don't come true.
Well, moving on, if this is a week you'd like to check out an NBA game, we'd advise you to do so at the New 24 podcast, as ticket prices for this week's slate of games are not only lower than ever, but will also provide you with the chance to potentially see some intriguing matchups at prices that will make your eyes pop. And if you don't believe us, just go and take a look at some of the prices for yourself across Ticketmaster and StubHub, to name a few of the ticket apps out there that you may already be familiar with. I promise to God, I'm not bullshitting you. I looked it up last night. I saw a pair of tickets between the Hornets and Bulls on the, I want to say, 300 level that were going for $25 before taxes. I also saw a pair of 100 level tickets that were going for $89 before taxes. I have not seen prices to a Bulls home game that low in quite some time. So if you want to catch an offer, this would be the perfect week, with there being very few games that NBA teams are playing due to the NBA Cup. We have ourselves a pair of NBA Cup quarterfinal matchups, as you know, set to take place on Wednesday night. First one going down at the venue regarded by many as the world's most famous arena, at MSG. Hawks All-Star guard Trae Young, who we just talked about, in his sidekick on the wing, and Jalen Johnson, are going to guide Atlanta in the battle, with a trip to Las Vegas on the line for a chance to play for $500,000 out in Sin City later on this coming weekend to take on Karl Anthony Towns, Jalen Brunson, and the New York Knicks on ESPN at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Central Time, followed by that second NBA Cup quarterfinal matchup between two Western Conference foes who have also been no strangers to one another in the last several years. The NBA Finals MVP from a couple years ago, known to many as Stephen Curry, is making his way to the Lone Star State to lead the Golden State Warriors against the young center, Alperen Sengun, Jalen Green, and the Houston Rockets at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time and 8:30 p.m. Central Time on TNT, while Saturday will present us with a pair of NBA Cup semifinal matchups set to go down between 3:30 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. Central Time on TNT, as we patiently await to see which four teams will have officially punched their tickets to Las Vegas for the weekend for the chance to play for that $500,000 prize, as the winner of Magic and Bucks will take on the winner of Hawks and Knicks in the semis to determine which team will represent the East in the NBA Cup final, while the winner of Mavs Thunder will square off against the winner of Warriors Rockets to see who will guide the West in the championship game on Tuesday, December 17th. Is that showdown will air at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 7:30 p.m. Central Time on ABC. Torrance, we know that everybody will be watching to see exactly how these games unfold in the second annual NBA Cup, as far as it pertains to the quarterfinal action, semifinals, to determine who plays for the ultimate prize next Tuesday night. However, outside of the NBA Cup games, and I know there's not a ton to choose from, which matchups over the next several days do you think fans should have their eye on the most in week 8?
All right, I got three games for you this week. I got the Lakers and Minnesota Friday. As I've said before, anytime LeBron and Anthony Edwards are on the court together, I'm going to tune in. And we also got the Lakers against Memphis on Sunday as well. We got LeBron against Ja Morant. And Sunday being December 15th, as we spoke about earlier, that's when pretty much all the contracts in the league become available for trade. And it might be the final game for a few guys on the Lakers, possibly. Who knows? We'll see after this weekend. And also Sunday, we got the Minnesota Timberwolves against the San Antonio Spurs. Definitely a matchup I'm looking to see. The Spurs right now, they're in play-in position. We spoke about the T-Wolves being in play-in position as well. And like I've said previously about the Spurs, I want to see them against these playoff teams this season and how they play and how they match up as we start looking to the future with Wemby and, you know, seeing if he can start taking those steps to playing like winning basketball.
I got one game on the docket. Friday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time, 8 p.m. Central time. Los Angeles Clippers against the Denver Nuggets in the Mile High City in Denver. These two teams have played twice this season. The Clippers have won both matchups. Last time they played in Denver, I believe it was the second game of the regular season. James Harden had a 2010 performance alongside of Norm Powell, who had 30 on the evening. I believe he hit a dagger three, silenced the crowd in Denver. We talk about the Nuggets and how they've gone from a team that was once at the top of the West the last couple of years to now they're in that playing round. They need to start winning some games. They got an easy stretch coming up after this. I believe they play Sacramento next. They're going to play Portland a couple of times. And then they have Phoenix intertwined in there alongside of Cleveland. But they got a few lottery teams coming up, like very soon. These are games that you got to find a way to close. And you know Nikola Jokic is going to put up numbers. You know James Harden, who just recently was out due to rest in the Clippers' most recent outing in the loss of the Rockets. You know he'll be back in action. Norm Powell should be healthy for that matchup. That should be an intriguing one. Can the Nuggets find a way to overcome the L.A. Clippers this season? We know they could beat the other L.A. team in the Lakers. But for some odd reason, they haven't beat the Clippers yet this season. I think you all should tune in to find out and see how that goes now.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in that one as well. Hopefully, we get some good matchups outside of the NBA Cup, but hopefully the NBA Cup lives up to the hype.
Oh, for sure. I'm expecting it to, and I'm glad that we got some of the stars from young and old involved in it. And hopefully, you know, we'll see which one rises to the top. Is, you know, we got eight teams fighting for it, $500,000 prize. Well, that officially concludes yet another episode of the New 24 podcast. Once again, if you've enjoyed everything that you've heard thus far, please feel free to follow along and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening from around the world. And make sure to leave us a 5-star rating, as we truly appreciate all of your support. We can't stress that enough to you, as we're available across all the major podcast platforms. You can also stay locked in with us to ensure that you don't miss any upcoming episodes that drop every Wednesday morning throughout the season by following the official RSS feed for the New 24 podcast at rss.com/podcast/TNTF. And last but not least, you can also follow us on Twitter, or X, as they call it these days, at What Gave Said, GAVE, and Torrance at TStacks_STACKS, to converse with us further away from the microphone about the game itself and more. For myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and my co-host, Torrance Stagger, so long, everyone, and have a great week.